I want you to hear one more excerpt from yesterday's Senate Judiciary hearing on all this. This is Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy pointing out that the stakes when it comes to the spread of false information are especially high in young democracies.
Facebook's fastest growing markets are in the developing world. Now there, consequences of spreading fake or divisive information can be dire, not just elections, it's people's lives.
One place where we see this happening is Myanmar, where some say misinformation is helping fuel violence against the Rohingya ethnic group. Paul Mosier is a New York Times technology reporter based in Asia. How widespread is Facebook in Myanmar, first of all, Paul?
It is completely ubiquitous. If you kind of think about it, the entire internet is Facebook, and Facebook is the internet. Most people don't necessarily know how to operate or get on and navigate regular websites. They kind of live, eat, sleep, and breathe Facebook.
So among all those many users, who's using Facebook to spread misinformation, and what are the kinds of things people are posting?
So we see misinformation on both sides, both supporters of the Rohingya and Buddhist nationalists. But in particular, the ones that seem the most problematic are government channels, which have put a lot of propaganda out there, saying everything from, you know, the Rohingya are burning their own villages to, you know, showing bodies of soldiers who may be from other conflicts on saying that this is the result of a Rohingya attack, to more nuanced stuff like calling the Rohingya Bengalis and saying that they don't belong in the country.
What kind of reaction do those posts get from the public at large?
A lot of these guys, you know, we're out to the monk who's been banned from preaching in Myanmar because he tends to sort of whip up this nationalist fervor, has, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers, and any kind of post like this gets widely shared. You know, people believe it and they, you know, sort of spill the bile underneath it, kind of arguing that this is the problem with these people and, you know, we should drive them out. So it's very obviously effective.
Does Facebook already have a policy and procedure for identifying and taking down hate speech? And does that process work better with, say, identifying things like swastikas and white nationalism than with slurs against the Rohingya?
They have community standards, and these generally apply to all manner of hate speech. The problem is kind of contextualizing it, and I think there's a sort of Western centrism to how Facebook polices these things. This is a company that is largely employs English speakers in America. So the idea that they're going to sort of be parsing Burmese and sort of be able to surf the cultural currents to understand what is hate speech and what isn't and what's real and what's not sort of stretches belief. But they also, you know, haven't done a lot to really sort of further that aim. There's not a huge Facebook presence in Burma. You know, a lot of the people that have really set up stuff to disprove fake news are freelancers or small kind of nonprofit organizations. It's not as if Facebook has kind of come in and taken a lead. It's needed these other people to help them. So it's almost as if they've outsourced that oversight to local groups who are clearly underfunded and don't have the resources to do it.
So when Senator Leahy of Vermont brought up this issue, his interlocutor didn't really have an answer for him.
You're monetizing information from users in the developing world. But what are you doing to make sure it's not used to undermine nascent democracy, especially in the undermining? It's not losing votes, it's losing lives.
It's really an excellent point and a very challenging topic. We view our platform as a vehicle for providing greater visibility into what's going on around the world and greater visibility into human rights abuses. Now, we do have an obligation to make sure that it is not misused.
And we're talking about lives.
So what do you think of that non-response? And as a technology reporter, what do you think Facebook should be doing?
It's such a complicated issue when you start taking in the kind of, it's almost Tower of Babel extent of the languages and cultures that are communicating on Facebook. But I mean, certainly I think the idea is that you have to do a lot better and invest a lot more. I mean, if you have something, you know, a humanitarian crisis on the order of what's happening with the Rohingya and your platform is being used as a tool to propagate that or help encourage that, the fact that other nonprofits and other organizations that don't have the sort of financial money and the profit power that you have are the ones taking the lead just seems to me to be surprising.
Do you think Facebook even considered these dilemmas when they first went to a place like Myanmar or when they even started up as a company?
I mean, certainly not when they started up as a company, right? I mean, it would be hard to imagine from, say, a Harvard dorm room, the kind of United Nations scale of issues that they have to deal with, right? I mean, it's bewildering. You need your own State Department to kind of handle the amount of stuff that's going on Facebook. I mean, it has 2 billion people. Languages are everywhere. I was just in Ecuador a couple weeks ago, and, you know, small towns in the Andes, and everybody is sharing all of their news on Facebook. So, I mean, it's just every corner of the world. And that just creates a bewildering set of conflicts and problems and issues that are going to crop up. And there's some hard thinking needs to be done. And I'm kind of glad I'm a journalist and not the one having to make some of those calls, you know. But yeah.
Paul Mosier is the New York Times technology reporter based in Shanghai. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thanks.